Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For the past 80 years or so, the Martha Graham Dance Company has been synonymous with contemporary dance. In fact, Martha Graham's influence on dance has been compared to Picasso's effect on art, Stravinsky's on music, or Frank Lloyd Wright on architecture. Today, the Martha Graham Dance Company keeps the spirit of her dance alive through faithful restaging of her remaining choreography, as many of the pieces were lost over the years, restaging and revisioning the lost choreography, and commissioning a new generation of choreographers. Tulsans will have a rare opportunity to see the Martha Graham Company when Corgus Productions brings them to Tulsa this weekend, this Saturday and Sunday at the Chapman Music Hall, as they present four works by Graham ranging from 1930 up to 1984's Rite of Spring, as well as a recently premiered work by Andonis Foniadakis. My guest was a former principal dancer in the Graham Company, who the choreographer created work for her. She danced all the major roles of Martha Graham, premiered work, and worked closely with the choreographer. Today, Janet Elber is the artistic director of the company, who's created new forms of audience access to the Graham masterworks, and has received numerous awards for her reconstruction of seminal modern American dance. She joins us to talk about the upcoming appearance of the Martha Graham Company here in Tulsa this coming weekend. Janet Elber, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. We're really excited to be there.
Yeah, a Martha Graham Dance Company. Of course, this is like a legend in American dance. She is to dance in America as Picasso is to art. And you've been associated with her for a long time, first as a dancer and now as the artistic director of the company. How does Martha Graham speak to us today?
You mentioned she's the Picasso. She's the Stravinsky. She's Frank Lloyd Wright, the Aaron Copland. It was a generation of artists in the 20th century who were forging a new voice in art, and Graham did that in dance and really took a hold of this new language she was creating and had such a strong vision for getting down to the elemental, to expressing true human emotion, that her work has a universality. We've performed it all over the world, and it's a human-to-human recognition for the audience. Now that she's passed away about 20 years ago now, we have some perspective on her legacy. We really can say that we've got a beautiful body of 20th century classics that will speak for many generations.
And that vocabulary, I mean, it had to come from somewhere, but from what it looks like, it mostly came from within, because there was nobody else dancing like she was dancing.
Yes, you're exactly right. And you're exactly right that it did come from within, because she was determined to express real human emotion, the human condition, rejecting dance that was sort of the faux oriental gods and goddesses from imaginary lands, or royalty, princes and princesses, or flowers or swans. You know, she, like the many artists in the 1930s, really wanted to discuss what was happening in the world stage between the wars. And she struggled to find a way to express emotion and studied how we hold ourselves when we laugh or when we cry, or what is the natural gesture, body language, that reveals what we're really thinking or feeling. And that's kind of the essence of her revolution, that she theatricalized body language.
I have heard it described as simple as a human breath.
Yes, it's true. She realized that emotion rides on the breath. When you laugh or when you cry, when you sob, it comes from the center of your torso. And her famous contraction and release, the driving movements of her vocabulary, are based on the breath. The contraction is sort of the coiling in of the torso as you exhale, and the release is the inhale and the expansion of the torso and all the energy that can radiate out through your arms and your legs and your head. It's an emotional idea, this idea that it's coming from the center, from your heart. But it's also a very strong physicality, because you're motivating everything from those strong core muscles. I see the Martha Graham technique in sports all the time.
It's true. And, of course, there's a whole generation of choreographers where you can still see Martha Graham within contemporary dance today.
Yes, she's just been so absorbed into dance and theater worldwide. this idea that gesture could reveal emotion. You know, generations, people now use this language, then they sometimes don't even recognize that it comes from Graham originally.
I heard that she was very generous about that, though, when she would see, you know, something that was very Martha Grahamian, and she would never say, well, that's my look. She would
yes,
just...
I think she took the flattery in the imitation. You know, she was flattered by it. And frankly, she was always so intent on creating something new that once she had created something and other people were copying it, she was already on to something else.
I was reading an account, and it kind of reminds me of the old Charles Mingus song, if Charlie Parker were a gunslinger, there'd be a whole lot of dead copycats. And it's the same with Martha Graham. In fact, there was a whole generation that sort of rebelled against that because that influence was so overpowering.
Absolutely. I mean, that's sort of been the nature of modern dance. The art form is about 100 years old now. And each generation, every 10 years is a generation in dance, really, felt that they had to revolt against the generation before them and create something new. It's really been the driving force, this idea of out with the old, in with the new. And one of the challenges for the Graham Company right now is that the field needs to expand and figure out ways to celebrate its legacy rather than just throwing it out. Our programming has changed a lot in the last 10 years or so as we've looked at other art forms and how they celebrate their legacies and their classics. We're kind of looking for the modern dance equivalent of a museum's audio tour, for example, or the opera's super titles. How do you give audiences new points of access to these wonderful works, help the audience step inside the Graham world?
Well, the other thing your company is doing is you're reconstructing a lot of Martha Graham's works and sort of, I don't know how much involves changing choreography or changing the circumstances of how you present the dance, but you're sort of reimagining a lot of these works too.
Yes, there'll be two examples of this on the program that we're bringing to Tulsa. One is the duet Errand Into the Maze that Martha conceived originally with a large set on stage. And the version we're bringing you is without the set. The choreography itself is so provocative and evocative that we decided to create a version that would be easy to travel with, that would allow the audience to focus on the shapes and design of the bodies themselves. It's also a practical reaction to the fact that about 2 years ago, Hurricane Sandy flooded our storage area, and our sets and costumes were all underwater for about 2 weeks. And we have been slowly rebuilding. So we took advantage of Sandy to create this version that has been very well received, and I'm looking forward to bringing it.
Now, this is based on a Greek myth, right?
Yes.
And this was a very powerful influence. And as much as she was creating an American body of work, she was going back to the classic stories for her inspiration.
She liked the Greek work in particular because, again, they were so concerned with the human condition and they're such timeless stories that she returned to them over and over again and used them to make contemporary statements. So this Errand Into the Maze, the story of Theseus who goes into the maze to battle the monster Minotaur, Martha sends a woman, and it's really a psychological journey. It's a metaphor for a journey into yourself and into confronting your own fears. So, yes, it uses an ancient story. Yes, it was created in 1947. And yet, yes, we are all still having to confront ourselves and our own fears. So it's really work that still speaks to today's audience.
We mentioned at the top, you know, how she was a part of this movement that defined an American ethos in art. And you have Aaron Copland in music. You have Virgil Thompson in music as well. You have painters like Thomas Hart Benton sort of rebelling against all these European influences. Was she aware that she was doing that, or was it she just had a singular vision and she happens to be American?
I think she was aware she was doing it. It's easier for us to categorize it looking back and seeing all those people. I mean, that was the era when American jazz was invented, and Copland and Gershwin and Frank Lloyd Wright in architecture and O'Neill and O'Keefe. I mean, the arts in America were being developed for the first time. You know, before World War I, we really were borrowing art forms from Europe for the most part. So she was part of this movement for America to find its own voice and its own forms of self-expression.
I think of like her dance that she created in the 1930s. You know, she's doing dance about the rise of fascism. She's doing dance about the Spanish Civil War and the horrors of the Spanish Civil War. She's doing things like a piece that you recently revised and sort of changed for the circumstances, American Document, which is right on the eve of the war. She's quoting the Declaration of Independence. And I don't think there's any other, at least dance artist, that was so topical and so politically and socially oriented.
Right. She very much was aware of the times and had a very strong political voice. It's one of the reasons I think modern dance has flourished in America, because the art form aligned itself with the social political concerns of the 1930s, which were considerable in America between the wars. Graham was invited to the Olympics in Berlin, the 1936 Olympics, and sent a very strongly worded rejection of the invitation back because she had many young Jewish women in her company and refused to align herself with that regime. So yes, she was very politically active, and yet the works that she created at that time transcend the era. They speak to human struggles, human joy, human various situations, because she did create works that were stripped away of decorations, stripped away of any fads, anything that would date them, would keep them in a certain era. And I think, in part, that's why they've become classics.
One work you're very familiar with, and it's perhaps the earliest work we'll see in your performances this weekend, is a piece from 1930, and it's a beautiful evocation of grief and sadness, Lamentation. This is a work you've performed many times, I'm sure. Tell us a little bit about this particular piece.
Martha created Lamentation in 1930. It's really at the cusp, at the very beginning. It helped launch her revolution. This idea that she wanted to reveal emotion in its most pure state. And the figure in Lamentation was completely radical compared to dance of that day. It still is, because the character is seated.
Yes.
You know, you think of a dancer as being on two legs and dancing around. This character is seated the whole time and encased in a tube of stretchy fabric. And it's like a sculpture come to life.
Yes, it exactly is, yeah. And it's all about the face, as well as the movement within being seated. It's the face is your pathway.
Right. Well, and it holds the essence of this idea that the torso is the center of emotion and the driving force behind her dance, because the torso in this work, it does all the moving. It rocks back and forth. It twists and turns and becomes the sort of the wrenching quality feeling of grief itself. And she used to tell us, you can watch this dance as if you're looking at a woman grieving or as if you're looking at grief itself.
Mm. And of course, the fabric covering the torso, it masks that movement of the torso somewhat. I mean, you can still see it, but it's almost like a veil.
Yes, it masks it, and yet I feel, you know, the fabric stretches. If the lighting is right, as it will be in Tulsa, it makes the pull of the fabric and the lines that change from torquing from one side to another, it almost like you're uncomfortable in your own skin. That stretchiness and that pull is the pull of emotion.
My guest today is Janet Elber, the artistic director of the Martha Graham Dance Company. Corgus presents the Martha Graham Dance Company, the internationally renowned company, this Saturday and Sunday at the Chapman Music Hall, the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. They're in the midst of a tour to about, I think, 30 cities, and we're very lucky that it's coming to Tulsa, and encourage everybody to get tickets. Janet Elber is my guest, who is now the artistic director of the company, but you worked with Martha Graham. She created roles for you. What was that experience like?
Oh, you know, in retrospect, I'm kind of awestruck. At the time, it was so practical. It was so immediate. Martha, you know, what do you want me to do? How can I help you with your vision for this thing? at the time, she was so engaging. She has a great sense of humor. People don't realize what a wonderful sense of humor Martha had. And she was a creature of the theater. She could really be whoever or whatever she wanted to be at any given moment. And she understood people by just looking at them. I think this is how she was able to take body language and turn it into a whole new type of dance, because she could read body language so deeply. She could be furious with you, she could flirt with you, she could laugh with you, she could become whatever she needed to become to draw out of you what she needed. And she knew which people to terrorize and which people to tease and which people to be stern with. I mean, she was a genius.
When she's setting a work on you, was it a matter of you having to stretch to accomplish the vision, or did she actually work with your natural tools to create something that was pretty natural? I mean, it might have been difficult to achieve, but it was natural within the way your body works.
Yes. Now, she was very collaborative and was the first to admit it. And my generation in the 70s, she was in her late 70s when I became a member of the company, and she was no longer moving easily. She had arthritic hands and feet, so she had to articulate what she wanted. She couldn't demonstrate it, and she would often suggest to us the quality that she would want. She would bring poems in and beautiful art books, trying to create a world. I used to say she tried to hypnotize us. And then she would ask us to improvise phrases of movement that she would then sculpt and make much more difficult, usually. More turns, higher legs, deeper contractions. So it was a wonderfully collaborative process. And when I look back over her career before I was part of the company, her collaborations with the great composers of her day, with the sculptor Isamu Noguchi for the beautiful sets he did on stage, and with designers for her costumes. She was very interested in mining a brain trust of people. She knew that she could use that as fuel for her own creativity.
Now, by the time you joined the company, she had finished dancing, but that really wasn't all that too long before you joined the company, because I think I read that she was dancing well into the 60s, maybe even as late as 1970. Is that right? Yeah. And I heard that when she finally quit dancing, that was a tough period for her.
Yes. And well, as I say, she was a creature of the theater. She really was. She lived for the new and what was going to happen next. She didn't have a family. And she danced until she was 75 or 76, always creating roles that were less and less physical and more dramatic for herself in her later years. But finally, when she had to leave the stage, she really thought she was going to end it all. And when my generation came into the company, began to experiment with doing choreography, being creative, from outside the dance rather than inside it. She had to relearn how to choreograph visually rather than viscerally. And I think she found it an interesting challenge, and then she was almost rediscovered. She did a Black Glamour ad, for example. And Betty Ford would visit our rehearsals. Jackie Onassis, Calder, and Copeland. And in the 1970s, people suddenly began to celebrate what she had done in the early years. And she accepted her role as a living legend, I think, even though she couldn't dance any longer.
If you just keep at it long enough, people acknowledge it.
Yes.
Even though she had great acknowledgement during her career, but there was a time when it was, her work was like it was, that was back then. And yet it's, what's amazing is the company has made it evident that this work is timeless. And what's really interesting to me about the company is, yes, you're celebrating this legend of Martha Graham, but you're also continuing to find choreographers in her spirit to create new works. And I know you have a new work by Nacho Duato and Donis Foniadakis, who will be, you'll actually show on this particular, it's a piece called Echo, just created this last March. It's an amazing piece.
It's a wonderful work. We're really proud of it. And yes, we are doing more and more new work that somehow connect back to our legacy with the work we're bringing, Echo, We asked Andonis Phoniadakis to choose a Greek myth to inspire his work, because Martha did that on so many occasions. So our program will have both Errand into the Maze, inspired by the myth of Theseus, and also this marvelous new work, Echo, inspired by the myth of Narcissus and Echo. We don't look for choreographers who actually work in the Graham style. In fact, we kind of actively look for choreographers who have their own voice and their own physical vocabulary. I think audiences will be astonished to see our dancers in this hyper-athletic, non-stop whirlwind of choreography that Phoniadakis has created for us.
And it really is. It's I mentioned Nacho Duato. It has that, not necessarily that look, but that sense of energy that are a part of both of those choreographers that are there. And and in the meantime, you're also doing this series called Graham Deconstructed, which is goes into the history of these Graham dances. In some cases, I think I may have alluded to this earlier, a piece like American Document, you've totally remade that piece based on what's happened in our particular contemporary times. Give us a sense behind the thinking behind updating these ballets in that way.
Well, for American Document, we really didn't have much choice, because Martha Graham's American Document is a lost dance. We have no record of it. We have the script that she used. She called it American Document. It was 1939. She wanted to send words across the water. The rise of the Axis powers were sending terrible messages to America, and she wanted to send some back. So she created a work that included an actor on stage speaking some of the Emancipation Proclamation, some of the Declaration of Independence, and various important American texts. So we had some photos of this work. We had about 5 minutes of little film clips, and we had the script. And we took them to the director, Ann Bogart, who collaborates with City Company, a wonderful theater company here in New York, and asked her if she would create a new American Document using Graham's, the ephemera of Graham's, as a blueprint. And she was delighted to do that and worked with 6 of her actors and 10 of our dancers and the playwright Chuck Mee, who chose new texts from A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, from the musical Oklahoma, from blogs from American soldiers in Iraq, a real selection that help identify America today. So that's a completely new piece, but sort of born out of part of our legacy.
Now, I understand that that's happened on a couple occasions. I would assume because Graham was a sort of did her dances viscerally, actually acting them out. Was there? Have we lost a lot of Martha Graham dances and choreography?
Well, yes, and mostly I think because it was so very expensive to film dance in the 30s and 40s and 50s. So we have select works that were filmed at the time, but she, in total, created 181 works, of which we have probably in the low 50s that we can bring back.
Now, I know right now you're doing something called Notes on a Voyage, which was another dance, which the original choreography is lost.
Right.
And so it's, again, this sort of reconstruction.
Yes, it's creating a new work of art from these shards of memory and photos and interviews. You mentioned our Graham Deconstructed series. That's here in New York in our theater space. Our studio turns into a black box theater, so it's a very intimate setting. About 100 people can come in and sort of step inside one of Graham's ballets. We often show archival materials, talk with original cast members, and then do a run-through of the work. For this Notes on a Voyage, Peter Sparling, who danced with me in the Graham Company, took all of the interviews with the original cast members and any other materials we had, the score that was created for the work by William Schumann, and has created a dance about the creation of the dance using media and text, voiceover, and dancers, and we'll be showing that here in New York.
Well, we hope a lot of people come out to see the Martha Graham Dance Company when it makes a rare appearance in Tulsa this Saturday and Sunday at the Chapman Music Hall. Janet Elber is our guest, the artistic director of the Martha Graham Company. Earlier in our conversation, you were talking about the devastation of Hurricane Sandy and what it did to the company's archives, your costumes, your sets. What is the process of rebuilding? You probably have incredibly historic costuming from great costumers. You mentioned the Osamu Noguchi sets that were so much a part of many of her works.
Yeah.
Are you just in the process of rebuilding now, or what exactly?
You know, every ballet is a different case. We started immediately to reconstruct what we could. We didn't lose everything. The Noguchi sets were saved. I don't know if you know that after Sandy, teams of preservationists came to New York and started helping those of us who had been part of the damage, Chelsea Galleries and the federal government, and they taught us how to sort of bathe those sets in a solution of alcohol and make them to arrest the mold that was happening, and talk to us about our costumes and whether if we washed them we'd ever be able to wear them again. And so we lost a lot completely, but we also are continuing to repair what we were able to salvage. It's going to be a multi-year process. The first year was very difficult. We didn't miss any performances, and the dancers were fully clothed, you know. it hasn't been an easy time. It did allow us, with the one thing on the program in Tulsa we haven't talked about, is the Rite of Spring. And in a way, we've again taken advantage of Hurricane Sandy, because the original set for the Rite of Spring was enormous and very difficult to travel with. And so following Sandy, we've designed a set that can travel easily. We had beautiful projections for the back wall of the stage designed, so you have the feeling as an audience member of seeing this wonderful atmospheric world that you can enter into, and yet it's something that we pretty much can put in a suitcase and bring with us. So I think that's closing our program in Tulsa, and it's really an extraordinary Graham work created in 1984, when she was 89 years old, amazingly enough. The sort of primal, visceral physicality of Graham's technique is a wonderful match for that same feeling in the Stravinsky score.
Hmm. Well, we look forward to the appearance. Janet Elber, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. We're eager to get there.
Janet Elber is the artistic director of the Martha Graham Dance Company, which will make an appearance, thanks to Corgis Productions, this coming Saturday evening and Sunday afternoon at the Chapman Music Hall of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. For more information on their appearance, visit corgis.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.